welcome. This is something that Dr. Northrup and I have talked about for a few months now, even though we only started preparing, or I should say I only started preparing maybe a week ago, but we've been talking about it for quite some time. And I'm very, very excited that we are about to launch TAP 2.0. And it really kind of came back to, you know, things happen in a strange way. So Dr. Northrup joined TAP, and that was a huge feather in my cap. I remember telling Dr. Ashton, do you think this is Dr. Christian Northrup, like the Dr. Christian Northrup? And she said, I don't know, I think so. And that's how it all started. And Christian, I don't know, you're not muted, are you?
Nope, I'm right here. Okay. Perfect, can you hear me fine? Yeah.
So, yep, I can hear. And so anyway, it was a really big thing. And since then we became friends and then became really good friends. And a few months ago, Dr. Northrup said that, Rashid, if you decide to open up TAP again, please let me know, because I want to share this with my followers. And so here we are. And we had probably a few thousand. I think we had over 3,000 people registered for the webinar. So we'll just wait for a few more minutes. We only have about 750 people on here. So I know that a lot of times people will register and then they can't make it. So we'll just wait for a minute or two before we really get going. But okay. Dr. Northrup, do you want to share anything about the background?
Yeah, it's very interesting that when TAP,
why did you join TAP?
I got your email about it, and then I began to listen to the video. And I remember it was like 2 a.m. and I was still listening. And you know, and then I signed up. I said, oh, I really don't want to miss this. And then when you and I talked, and we found out that we were both fans of Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, and then also his book published 30 years after he died called Outwitting the Devil, which is frankly what we're doing right now on planet Earth, I found you to be a kindred spirit in many, many, many ways. It's really unusual for another doctor, because you and I both know we don't have that many colleagues around the world. We have a lot of people who also went to medical school and are practitioners, but in terms of the people who have just really understood the power of the mind, the power of your thoughts, the power that each of us has, but only when we're aligned with something bigger than our egos. When you understand that, then you really have the keys to the kingdom, and you got it. And then you can put them into the ignition and drive away. And it, you know, it's so interesting to be introducing people to TAP at this time when every system we have known on the planet as reality is kind of crumbling before our very eyes. And you and I can see it, but what's interesting about us is we don't let that stop us at all. I mean, we just keep plowing forward. It doesn't matter what CNN says. It doesn't matter what PBS says. It doesn't matter what the New York Times said. The purveyors of reality, those people who have taught us, this is reality. You and I both realize this has nothing to do with reality. This is a kind of a overlay of conditioning. And we each have to get over that. Like asking permission, always asking permission. Do I have permission to breathe? Think about our profession, really. You know, where you have to come to one of us to have a physical before you do sports when you're 14. Like, really? I mean, like always the doctor is the one who's giving the blessing about what you can or can't do. And I learned that in World War II and Nazi Germany, it was doctors in white coats. When people got off the trains, it was doctors in white coats who determined their fate. And people believed it, because they were entrained to believe that a doctor knew something about your body that you didn't know. And now you and I both realize none of that is true. It's just not true. So,
and we haven't even started the webinar yet. And this is what this is the dynamic, like you said, just for people to show up and just hear us talk. That would be, I think people would be intrigued by that. So I'm going to do something to make sure that I optimize my internet. I'm having a little bit of a lag on this side, so just bear with me 1 second. And I think we've got about 850 people here, so we'll be ready to start.
Okay.
For everyone that's here with us, you guys are in for a real treat. And the reason you're in for a real treat is because, besides the fact that Dr. Northrup is with us, and that's a real treat, there's going to be a lot of information that we're going to share here. And there's going to be a lot of questions that we're going to take. I've got some of our MAP to Get Ahead coaches, some of my coaches that help us to extend our reach from the clinic out to the rest of the world. They'll be fielding some questions, and then they'll let us know at the end what some of the questions are, and we'll try to answer those. And we have a number of very special gifts for you guys. And there are three different things specifically that you're all going to get access to that are specifically for those people that are attending. It'd be hard for you to believe that I was a Boy Scout and Eagle Scout. Be prepared was our motto, and obviously I was not very prepared. So I apologize for that, but I do have the three things, and I needed a specific six-digit number so that everybody would get access, all of Dr. Northrup's followers would get access to this gift. And we needed that invitation code. So having said that, I will let you guys know what those three things are at the end of the webinar. Well, actually, I'll tell you now so that everybody knows. Those that stay to the end of the webinar, you know, this is what they call, I think they call this a legitimate bribe. And I've never done this before. So I'll tell you, even if you leave right now, which is okay if you want to leave.
Right.
I will still make sure that you guys get this, okay? So you will get it for everybody that is on here. You'll get this automatically, even if you leave. It doesn't matter. But one of those things that I know you guys are going to want, because I haven't told anybody this. In fact, only Dr. Ashton knew about it, and the TAP executive director, Stephanie, knew about it, only because I got their input. But Dr. Northrup, you don't even know about this yet, but do you remember Napoleon Hill's Laws of Success?
Yes. I don't remember what, so, you know, I know all the stories. And one of my favorite is that you have to take your creative energy, your creative drive, and it has to be sublimated and not just put all over the place. You got to literally take it and use it to manifest it into reality. Yeah.
Yes, he's got some incredible stories and incredible components in his Laws of Success. But one of the things we've put together, and I'm just going to show everyone what you guys are going to get, because I wasn't planning on doing this in the beginning because we're going to just talk about TAP, but I'm going to show you guys this right now. So because I'm proud of it. And let's see, actually, this is, well, you guys can kind of see, Dr. Northrup, can you see this?
Yes. The definiteness of purpose.
Right.
Yep.
So this is part of the TAP into Reality Mindset Vault, which nobody really knows about, but there are going to be 50 scrolls in this vault. And the first 17 of them, everybody is going to get, anybody that wants it will get it. The remaining 33, the last 33, only TAP members will get. But this is the first goal, definitiveness of purpose or definiteness of purpose. And so every day from now till we launch TAP 2.0, there will be one scroll that's released and you all will get that. So I'm very, very proud of this because it went through and we basically took his laws of success, distilled it down to the essence. And so you'll get all of this. And of course, for all the TAP members, existing TAP members, as well as new ones, you'll get all 50 scrolls. Now, I'm not going to give them to you all at one time because, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You eat an elephant one bite at a time. And I find that sometimes when we're overwhelmed with information, we tend not to go through that information. We sometimes may lose the essence of that message. And so the formula for you guys right now watching this webinar is that when you get these scrolls, you read it. I mean, it only takes about 30 seconds to read this, okay? You read it, you think about it, you read it again. And then you read it a third time before you go to bed. That's the formula. Next day, when you get the next one, you do the same thing. Now, if you really are an overachiever, like Bart Simpson wearing those shirts, this is overachiever and proud of it. If you're really an overachiever, then I want you to read the previous day's scroll first thing in the morning again. Now, there's a reason for this. In martial arts, there's repetitiveness in motion. You create muscle memory. The more times you do a certain form, a certain motion, I remember, you know, just one strike, and our master would have us do it over and over again. I'm thinking, it's just one movement. Why do I need to do it 50 times or 100 times before you go on to the next movement? And then when I was competing at the national level and at the world level, I realized why, because your mind is frazzled because you've got 87 move kata coming up and you can't remember what I'm supposed to do, but the body remembers the motion because you've done it so many times. It's muscle memory. This is the same thing. There's a muscle memory in the brain. It's a memory. And so you go into an automatic component, an automatic drive. So if you do this four times, you do the review the scroll when you get it, you review the scroll later on in the day, and then you review the scroll the last thing before you go to bed. And then in the morning, the next morning, review it again. If you can do that, and you do that every day for the next 17 days for every one of these scrolls, your life will change. You don't have to be a TAP member. You don't have to have bought in to the TAP concept. You don't have to be involved with the opportunities. You don't have to go through the, don't do any of the training. It will change your life. Now, all people will get the first day of training for TAP completely for free. In fact, what we're going to do is when you open TAP up, it will be only available for, we haven't decided yet whether it's going to be 48 hours or 72 hours or 96 hours, but it's only going to be available for a few days. But during those few days, the first day of training that was done in February of 2021, when TAP was first launched, will be available to everyone. That's 5 hours of content. You never have to pay for it. You will see it. Once the shopping cart closes, then only for the members, they'll get the second day of training and then all the other opportunities and then all the phenomenal, I don't remember how many hours we have now. I think 14 hours of content with very, very successful people, of which Dr. Northrup is one of those people that I interviewed. And we've got a lot more coming. We've got probably 22 people still on the schedule over the next 6 months that we are going to have content exclusively only for TAP members. This is content that's never been shared before. For example, with David Icke, Dr. Northrup, you probably know who David Icke is.
I sure do.
So David and I did 2 hours and people were wondering what the subject was. 2 hours, and it was on how do you raise children that are awake? How do you raise children that have their own mind, that think? And it was a fascinating topic. And we went into all sorts of things. We talked about Watika, if anybody knows about Watika or Watiko, and it's a Cree word for fear. We talked about that. And we talked about how success is formulated, how success is bred. We talked about the formula for success. We talked, that came out wrong, formula for sex. It was formula for success. And so we had a lot of these different things that we did. And it was one of those things that I wanted to make sure that everyone knows the content that we have for TAP is completely original content. Now, some of these 17 scrolls, this comes from Napoleon Hill stuff, but I've taken a lot of things from other people that influenced my life. There'll be things from Andrew Carnegie. We've distilled it down. We break it down. So TAP is about literally what the acronym stands for, transforming abundance potential into reality. So some of you may feel that you're feeling a TAP. If you feel a TAP, there's a reason for it, because right now in this time in history, in this moment in history, things are happening that are critical for mankind to take the next step in the evolutionary process. But as you all know, the key component of evolution is growth, and growth can be very difficult, be very painful, can be downright tumultuous and disruptive beyond belief. And that's what we're going through right now. Before the new can come in, the old must go. And this is where TAP was born. It was born from the premise that we humans in all the monotheistic religions, in Islam and Christianity and Judaism, we all believe that we were made in the image of the Creator, that human beings were made in the image of the Creator. And the Creator is, by definition, creating. And if we were made in the image of the creator, then by default, if the creator made us in his image, then we are creators. And therefore, we have the ability to create whatever world we want. And this is what TAP is about. We are going to make the world exactly the way it was meant to be, a world of abundance, of endless abundance, beyond our capabilities of even comprehending. I talk about this ad nauseum, but we have been raised in a society that has been led to believe through our clergy, through our rabbis, through our imams, through our school system, our education system, our parents, who are many of these people, most of these people are well-meaning, but we have been taught to live in a world of poverty. It's a poverty mindset. You know, it's always about, hey, maintain your debts, you know, become debt free. Where's the energy at? Debt free. It's on debt. It's not create so much abundance that you don't have to worry about debt. But the mindset has been trained. We have been trained to believe that the world is a world of limited resources, and it is not. All right. I will challenge you to think about how many blades of grass exist in a field. Just think about that. How many blades of grass in a field? And now think, how many fields are there on the planet? Or how many grains of sand are they on a beach? And then how many beaches are there? Or how many leaves on a tree? Can you count the number of leaves on a tree? It's impossible. And then imagine how many trees there are on the planet. So we are living in a world of abundance, but we have been led to believe that we are not in an abundant world. And TAP is breaking through of all of those boundaries. I argued with life for a penny, only to have been dismayed that anything I would have asked of life, life would have paid. That's what we're here for tonight. And I am glad that Dr. Northrup is joining me. So Dr. Northrup, do you want to, how do you want to do this? I mean, you know, we spent so much time masterminding this. I think we talked about it for about 8 seconds. You know, we're just going to get on and talk. I think that's what our strategy was.
Well, you know, so, I think that the main thing about you and I is that we think differently than the average person. I want to give you a very specific example. So we have here in my state an alliance of various healthcare workers, many of whom are facing termination in their job if they don't get the jab or do, or the juice, whatever we want to call it. And so we all hired this amazing lawyer who God sent. And then the judge threw it out because at this particular moment in history, you would be very hard pressed to find an honest judge within the system of the United States. In the same way that you're very hard pressed to find an honest journalist in the mainstream media. This is so interesting that you and I are doing this in the midst of the most incredible criticism of both of us publicly that anyone could ever imagine. I finally watched your piece on CNN, you know, and then in that same article, they pulverized me. And then we just found out there's another group, disinformation.org, and, you know, they want to go after us and all the rest of it. And here we are. So everyone listening, I want you to just notice this. We're moving ahead because we now know in our lives that they have no power. It's amazing to get to the point where you know they have no power. And I just was asked today to by Vice Television, could you please do an interview with us on ivermectin? We noticed that you talk about it a lot. It's like, I wouldn't give you the time of day. You work for the devil. I don't. I work for God. And so I think that the thing about the two of us that, and then the way you did the conference, the Advanced Medicine Conference, we're all ready to go to Charlotte. You've got the hotel, you've got everything. That's an easy flight for me. And then, boop, turning on a dime, we're in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Why? because they would not honor the contract that said, we will not be muzzled, we will not be masked in the hotel. What you and I have is unstoppable courage to stand up to the masses based on, I mean, I was in the crucible of this for my entire career, always pushing the envelope, always things like, how would God do this? What would happen in just in nature when you had a baby? Would you clamp the cord and whisk the baby away from its mother and take it to the nursery and put it under the sink and hose it off and leave it away, then warm it up in a warmer? Would we really be doing that? And the answer, of course, is no. You wouldn't do that with a dog or a horse. Why would you do it with a human? And so we've always questioned reality. We've always questioned reality. And somewhere along the line, and I don't know about you, but I knew that there was something more going on in life. And I knew it years and years and years ago. And that our job was, and neither of us has been a rebel telling the medical system, you know, go. And we haven't done that. We've managed to work within the system, but the criticism, especially now,
but anyway.
Yeah, we tried it, but it has been constant. And now here we are, and we're teaching people, how can you begin to think in such a way that you don't go through life constantly afraid? You don't go through life constantly asking permission. What I noticed in our meeting today is a lot of members of our alliance were wondering, well, how are we going to go forward with this? We don't have the money. People are tired. They don't know how we're going to do it. And I thought, people, don't you get it? This is, now we're back to that scroll. Singleness of purpose. We are not going to lose this, period. We are not going to lose this. We are going to go forward in this. How is it going to happen? I have no idea. I just know.
It doesn't matter.
Go happen.
It doesn't matter how. That's right. It's only that we keep on going. That's exactly right.
That's
it. In fact, it's such a great point you brought up, because in the first day of training for TAP, we actually talk about the formula of how to achieve success. And one of the biggest things, the biggest problems, is people get hung up on the how.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's irrelevant about the how. And so I cover that. We go into that in deep. I mean, deep. I had people that sent videos in that told me that just the first day of training, it transformed their life. So there's going to be a lot of cool things are going to happen, but that's exactly it. We aren't going to lose this. And here's why. Because the only way you can ever fail is if you stop. That's it. It's so easy. If you don't stop, you're never going to fail.
That's
it's
right.
It's that simple.
That's
so it. I really appreciate those comments that you just made, because you're right. That's exactly how the system works. It's based upon them infusing fear and people buying into the fear. But as soon as you realize, in the words of Roosevelt, there is nothing to fear except for fear itself. Because remember, what is fear, guys? What is fear? Think about it for a second. What are you afraid of? I had Dr. Northrup, you actually wrote the foreword for, or you were mentioned in the back of one of the books by a friend of mine. The Wrinkle Cure, Nick.
Nick Perricone. Yeah.
Perricone, yeah. Right. So Nick was a great guy. I haven't talked to him in years, but I ended up being his opening act in South Africa and in Europe. Uh-huh. And it was kind of funny because I was the opening act, but then people were leaving after my lecture. So they flipped it. And so they would have Nick go first and then they would stay for my lecture, which was strange because nobody knew who I was, but Nick had all these books out.
Yeah.
So Nick's main marketing team, I became friends with them, and a couple of the principals were at my clinic a few years later from South Africa, actually. And one of them said something that was very profound. And he said, you know what the difference between you and Nick is? Now, Nick's a great guy. He was, like I said, I haven't talked to him probably 20 years, but I didn't understand what they were saying. And Nick was always nice to me. And I said, what? And this marketing guy says, you're not afraid to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was a funny thing. I said, yes, I am. He goes, no, you're not. I said, yes, I am. He goes, no, you're not. I said, of course, everybody's afraid to die. He goes, then tell me, what are you afraid? You know, what are you afraid of dying for? Tell me what you're afraid of. And I said, well, I won't be here to see my children grow and to guide them. He goes, well, that's not a fear. That's a concern. That's a desire. That's not a fear. He goes, what keeps you up at night thinking about what's going to happen when you die? And I thought about it and I said, nothing.
Nothing.
I said, I'm kind of actually excited about it. I'm kind of excited because I get to ask the creator many questions, you know, the truth about John F. Kennedy. You know, why is it that certain things, why is it that, you know, you have a closed house and then a fly sprouts out of nowhere. Where does that fly come from? I don't understand it. All the doors are closed. You know, I've got all these questions that I want to ask the creator. So anyway, it made me realize afterwards that I had never thought about fear of dying, but I have many times looked up at the sky and in a beautiful day and said, today is a good day to die. Not that I want to meet my maker sooner than scheduled, but every time I've said that, I get this strange message back. It's almost like God sends me a message back saying, yeah, you wish it was going to be that easy. No, you got a lot more work to do. So buckle in and keep on working. And so I think this is part of the fear aspect that Watiko, as David Icke puts it, the dark side has no power. The only power they can get is from you, that you give it to them. So to understand this concept, it's actually based upon the movie Monsters. You remember the children's movie Monsters?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? So the monsters scare the children scream, and they bottle those screams, and that's where they get their energy source. Literally, somebody in Hollywood was trying to send us a message.
You're right. You're right. Yes.
They took the power from the fear invoked within the child, and they would bottle that power, that fear, into these large tubes, and that's how they would run their cities. That was the power they got. Now, what was funny was at the end of the movie, the premise was they realized that they got more power when the child laughed. And this is an important concept. Again, Hollywood sends us messages, but it want you guys to remember that fear is nothing more than your imagination looking at a possibility among many different possibilities in the possibility of something occurring that may have the potential of occurring. And now you changing your entire life, you changing your entire action, your direction that you're moving based upon this illusion created in your mind about a possibility in the future. How absurd is that? Now, guys, don't mistake what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be concerned about danger. Danger is real. Okay, we're not talking about danger. We're talking about fear. Danger is real, and you need to accommodate yourself to make sure that you deal with the danger. You see a bear coming towards you, okay, sidestep it. Get behind a tree, or, you know, it's not like that joke that reminds me, you know, you and a buddy of yours are out in the woods, and a bear comes out and starts chasing you, you're running, and your buddy looks at you and he goes, you think we'll outrun the bear? And you look at your buddy and go, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just got to outrun you. So the whole concept here is that we don't allow the fear to motivate us. We do what we need to. We need to do whatever we need to do. That's understanding danger and understanding that we are being reactive to a potential for harm. But danger is different. Fear is different. Fear doesn't exist. I mean, what is fear look like? What does it smell like? How much does it weigh? There's no such thing as fear. It lives in your imagination. That's the strange thing about fear. So as soon as you realize that fear is something that you create about a possibility of a potential outcome in the future, and most people, the naysayer in their mind jumps to that conclusion. But you remember, there could be other possibilities. There are all sorts of different possibilities. So to me, when you see fear, I seek fear. The reason I seek fear is because I want to move right into it. The funny thing about fear is as soon as you move into it, it dissipates because the illusion is suddenly evaporated. The key is to move into what you fear with alacrity, with definitiveness of purpose. Boom, move right into it and it dissipates. Guys, it's the funniest thing. I've done it so many times now that as soon as something fearful, you know, that I might think about, oh, wait a second, you know, could this be fearful? I move into it and my mind's trying to convince me not to do it, and I've already done it. And it's like literally the duality within myself, I've already gone through it, and I'm looking back at myself saying, what the hell are you talking about? I've already done it. That's the key to conquering fear, because fear is only an illusion. All right, remember that. All right, so there's so many things we could go in and in directions that we could fall into this. I think we've got 999 people, Dr. Nice. Malcolm, that are on with us.
Nice.
So for considering we had 3,000 people, they say normally it's 5 to 10% of people that register for a webinar come on. So we've got over 33% that are registered, 33% of the people on right now. So that's good. So when you joined TAP, Dr. Northrup, I'm sure you had some questions. So while the coaches are busy getting questions that people may have, I'm curious, did you have any thoughts in your mind? Like, what type of wrestling did you do with your own mind before you joined TAP? Thinking about, you know, I'm just curious, was there any type of mental hurdles that you had to jump through or questions that you had?
No. And this is one of the things about me. I have a sense of things, and I tend to be an early adapter of what is the right thing to do. So I don't spend a lot of time with, okay, what am I going to get out of it? I also looked at you and your career and the number of people you've helped with the most awful diseases. I mean, you know, terminal cancers and all of that. And I trusted that what TAP would do, it would take my already existing belief system and just support it to, now everybody, the term quantum leap literally refers to a quantum of energy that an electron requires to jump into the next orbit. And we all need that energy to go into the next orbit. And right now in humanity, we need to go into the next orbit, because those who are consumed by fear, and you know, I've never seen anything like it. It's almost like there are two different groups. There is those of us who are growing, those of us who are doing this, and then those who are going to die. It's never been clear. There's no middle ground anymore. It's this or it's this. Now, I said when I wrote The Wisdom of Menopause that perimenopause was a fork in the road, grow or die. Right now on the entire planet, it's grow or die. And there are so many people absolutely consumed by fear that was created, just like those Monsters, Inc., those tubes of children's tears and crying. Literally, this was all made up. And you and I knew it. We knew it from the beginning. So this is the same way that I knew that TAP was the next thing, because my gut just told me, okay. But it, you know, it came from an entire history of you know, watching or reading the books of Catherine Ponder, The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity, one of my favorite, and Nikola Tesla talked about this. There's this substance of the universe called divine radiant substance. I forget what Tesla called it, but it's the same thing. And it is, the universe is made out of this. It's not just blank, empty space. It's potential. And it's real. And we mold it with our thoughts and our emotions and our beliefs. And once you know that, and the amount of time it takes you to mold it, that's why you read that scroll first thing in the morning. You're constantly planting a seed so that you take this incredible thoroughbred that is your mind and you train it. Now, if you're, let's say that you're training a horse to do dressage, which is a very complicated thing. The horse has to go through all these different maneuvers. It's an athlete to get good at this. And then the rider has to be really good on the horse to figure out how to get the horse to do what you want. Well, the mind is like the horse. You have got to figure out how to get it to do what you want. And you don't fight it. You work with it. And then you talked about, and you will have to go through these things. You have to go through the fear. You have to go through the pain. Right now, let's talk about how many people listening right here, right now, are grieving the loss of relationships that they had for 20 to 30 years, maybe with their own children, maybe with their own parents. And then there's this.
Raise your hand hands if you know how to do that. Raise your hands to answer that question that Dr. Northup just asked. How many people have lost relationships or are grieving for lost relationships due to this nonsense that's going on the planet right now? So we're at over 200 people right now.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. So now we're talking about fear.
300 people.
Yeah. The fear that it's never going to be the same, that you're never going to be loved the same, that you'll never find anyone like that person. But what you find is you are in the crucible. You are being refined to be more of your true self. And in a very short period of time, you will find that your relationships are better than they have ever been in this whole 2-year period. I have met my soul family in a way that I never thought I would have colleagues like this, friends like this. My social life is better than it's ever been because there's nothing superficial about it. Notice how we started this webinar. I got boom right into, what do we use doctors for to decide who goes to the gas chambers and who doesn't? This is the psyche of people, what they've been taught about how you should do what the doctor says. It's BS. It's absolute BS. And now I'm, and I've always known that. I haven't been to a doctor in forever. I know what they're selling. I'm not interested. I've never had a mammogram. I don't go in for anything. I actually practice the causes of health.
People love the fact that I wrote a book called The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. So, I mean, when it became an international bestseller. So we're same aligned that way. We know that the profession of medicine, and in fact, doctor, physician means actually to teach. It doesn't mean to tell you what to do. It doesn't say to a director or telling you what to do. It's to teach you, to empower you so that then you can make your own decisions.
That's right. And so notice everybody, because this is such a great teaching moment. So Dr. Pattar is on CNN and they say, well, you must be crazy. Well, what they don't tell you is CNN is completely funded by the forces that would keep you sick and on drugs. It's, CNN is completely funded by Pfizer. And once you understand that, they cannot afford to allow you to learn what TAP can teach you. They can't afford that because then their market share just plummets. And so I can guarantee all of you that, yeah, you're going to have to go through some grief. You're going to have to go through some letting go. You can feel that. You just feel it. You feel it like any grieving. You feel it. Grief actually means, I learned this last night, grief means love. Grief means love. The harder you grieve, the more you loved that person, that job, that whatever. But one thing I want to say to everybody, we have a lot of people now, they're resentful. I worked for the hospital for 30 years, and this is the way they treat me. I gave my heart and soul to this job, and now they're just letting me go so easily. And I want everyone to realize something. You don't work for a hospital, a doctor's office, whatever. You need to decide you work for God. You work for God. So if you are working for God in a particular clinic, that's beautiful, but you work for God. And God is going to send you on an adventure now into a whole new reality. And things are going to get better than you ever thought that they could, because you've been called. You wouldn't be here unless you were called to use your power to create heaven on earth, because that's where we're going. That's where we're going. Now, a lot of people are not coming with us, and that's for sure, as I'm done with trying to take anyone with me. I spent about the last 2 years trying to teach people and trying to bring them along. One of the things, Dr. Pattar, that you did in South Dakota that I'd like to talk about, when someone would get up to ask a question and they got right into the victim mode about how they couldn't do it and there was no one in their area and they were all alone and you had no patience for that whatsoever. And it was very funny to watch. So talk about that.
Well, it's actually, and I can always tell those that I have a natural affinity for, because those are the people like you're laughing about that, Dr. Northrup, because you saw it. Other doctors were so angry at me because they were like, you need to be more compassionate. You need to allow people some flexibility. Not everybody is going to be a bull in a china shop like you are. Those are the exact words that we use. But what they didn't understand, which obviously, if everybody understood it, we'd be in a different planet, is that in my world, by me allowing that energy to be around me, it's potentially affecting me in a negative manner. And I want to have none of that around me. And I want everyone to be empowered. Remember, words are powerful, okay? Words are so incredibly powerful, and people forget how powerful words are. Intention is powerful. There are so many components that we take for granted, and we think, oh, it's okay. Like when you tell a child no, you know, we were probably all, our parents probably said no to all of us when we were growing up, but you never, ever want to say no to a child because you are stagnating, blocking, stopping, inhibiting them. You want to give them another option. You can redirect them, but don't say no. Say, how about we do this? Or yeah. Why are you doing this? Ask them a question, engage, let them win, set them up for winning rather than blocking them. No. Okay. That's inhibition. And inhibition is not conducive to growth. So when the reason I would shut it off is because I have an abhorrence for the poverty mindset and for the fear mindset. I just can't tolerate it. And so that's why I just have to shut it down. You know, it's kind of like a gnat or a fly that's like flying around. And you just want to go whack and slap it and just get it out of your field. So that's really why I do it.
But it is funny because there is an edge there. There is an edge where we need compassion. But I think we've gone way overboard on that. Right now, for instance, I have a friend with some young men in her life that are stepchildren, and they have girlfriends. And the girlfriends, if they want to control the situation, they begin to cry. And then, you know, like, oh, you triggered me, or you said something mean, or what, then they cry and it controls the whole situation. Now, you were in the Army and you know that way back, that behavior would not be tolerated at all, not at all. And I think we each need to understand that we cannot allow our weaknesses to control us. We need to have compassion for that inner wounded child. We've all got that. We've all got that, and there's ways to do it. You don't ignore that wounded child inside. You attend to it, but as the adult that you are now.
I totally agree. I think part of this where people have allowed this political, you know, there's a political correctedness. And now that political correctedness has gotten us to a point of such idiocy. It's almost like the truth can no longer be tolerated because the truth, it's like that movie with can't remember his name now. You want the truth? You can't handle the truth.
Oh, yeah. Jack Nicholson. That was a few good
men. Jack Nicholson. That's right. Yep, that's a few good men. That's right. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it's almost like we're in that type of a situation. Nobody can really handle the truth anymore. And so we just bounce around it. And the problem is when you don't live in integrity and nobody lives in integrity, then you cannot be in a world that is integrous. The characteristics of an integrous world is to have bold communication and to say what the truth is and to whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. It's the truth. But when you start to blunt the truth and you buff out the truth and you take all the rawness from truth away and then you try to soften it and then you try to recolor it, and you just, it's no longer the truth. It's now adulterated. And that's the world I think we're living in right now. And that's why more and more people are becoming awake, and they're becoming awake because they're seeing the facades that have been out there. You know, for people like Dr. Northrup and myself, you know, practicing medicine in this world, I've been a doctor for 30 years, and I can tell you, there's so many things that I knew that media would never, ever, they don't want to talk about our results in cancer. Why? No. Because they literally dwarf what, you know, let's put it this way. If they had a 500% increase in success rate, if they had a 5,000% increase in results, if they had 10,000% increase in success in their results with treating cancer the way they do, they still wouldn't come close to where we are. Now, I'm not trying to take credit for it because God is the only healer. We know that. But I can tell you that what they're doing, which is a form of poisoning, and again, we're not here talking about medicine, but guys, just logic, just think about it logically. Why is radiation dangerous? Now, I'm not talking about chemo and radiation. I'm just talking about radiation. Like why, when you break your hand and you go into the hospital and they go and do an X-ray on you, why is it that you have to wear shield? Why is it that they have lead shields that the doctors work or the technicians wear? Why is that? Why do they wear that? They wear that shield and you have to wear a shield to protect certain parts of your body because the radiation that is used to visualize the bone structure is also detrimental to the body, especially if it's chronically utilized. And people that are there in those X-ray rooms all the time, like the technicians, the radiologists, et cetera, they're getting a lot of exposure. So why is that dangerous? Well, because it causes DNA addicts to form. Well, what is the DNA addicts? What do they do? Well, they cause mutation of DNA. And what does that lead to? It leads to uncontrolled cellular proliferation and suppression of apoptosis. Well, what is that? That is cancer.
Cancer.
All right.
Yeah. Yes.
So why do people that are working in a laboratory making chemotherapy, why do they have to wear hazmat suits?
Yeah, because stuff is toxic. Poison. Yeah. Yeah.
Poison. And now when somebody gets sick and their immune system is rendered more susceptible, what do? We give them the same things that we know can cause cancer, i.e. chemotherapeutics and radiation. So does it make any sense how we're treating? So in fact, you wouldn't even have to be that good of a doctor. In fact, you could be the worst doctor on the planet and just don't give chemo and radiation, you're going to get a better success. I mean, that's a fact.
I know.
I had a doctor that worked for me that was a Russian doctor. He was from Armenia. He was Armenian. And he translated the study for me that was done sometime in the early 2000s. And it was a fascinating study. This study took breast cancer patients and they took lung cancer patients. And they broke those two groups up into two sub-cohorts. And what they did was they took half of the breast cancer patients and half of the lung cancer patients, and they took them to the regular prevailing treatment modality, whatever it was in Russia, including chemo, radiation, et cetera. The other group, get this, Dr. Northrup, the other group of breast cancer and lung cancer patients, they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. There was no lifestyle modification. There was no advice. You know, if you bungee cord jumped, that was fine. High risk behavior, they didn't try to change it. If you didn't wear seatbelts, no problem. You smoked, okay, no problem. They didn't do anything. At the end of the period, I think it was like 14 years or 13 years, most of the people had died well within the first 5 years in one of those groups, but what they found, they took it out to for like 14, 15 years. And what they found was that the group that they did nothing with, no intervention, no supplements, no meditation, no clean water, continue smoking, continue doing whatever you're doing, high risk behavior. The group that they did nothing with lived 3.7 times longer than the group that they gave chemo and radiation to.
What does that
tell you?
Yeah.
See, it doesn't matter. You could be the worst doctor and give no advice, and you're still going to get a better result than chemo and radiation. But the fear, look at the fear. You have cancer. Oh my God, you've got fear. And now they're going to paralyze you.
And what else they do? Think about it. Cancer is about timing. The cells have lost their timing. What happens when you get the diagnosis? First of all, we know that the immune system plummets and the cancer really starts to grow right after the diagnosis. But we also know that there's so much fear. It's like, oh my God, get it out. And there's this crazy idea that the cancer grows like overnight. What's interesting, and you and I both know this, the cancers that are not going to kill you are the ones that are found on the routine screening, the stuff you would die with but never die from. And the stuff that really comes on just overnight, that's a whole other soul lesson. But Gilbert Welsh was at Dartmouth, my alma mater, and the White River Junction VA, and he wrote a book called Should I Be Tested for Cancer? Maybe not, and here's why. And he talked about not even understanding the biology of the tumor, and that if you did enough autopsies, you would see that there were all these cancers that were never even diagnosed. It's the minute it's diagnosed, okay, now we're back to what TAP is. The minute it's diagnosed, you begin to focus on it. What is it doing? It's like a lump in your breast. You feel it, it's there. You touch it so much, then it gets sore, then you're worried that it's growing. So there's a lot to be said for not constantly be looking for something. I had a patient once, and she said to me, "Thank God I've finally been diagnosed with breast cancer. Now I can stop worrying about it." Unbelievable. She was dead in 2 years. She was dead in 2 years because she had worried about it her whole life.
I had a patient similar that would come in for 9 years. She came to me, and every couple of months, she was worried about cancer. And she wanted to do this test. She wanted to do that test. I'm worried about cancer. And I told her, you got to stop worrying about cancer. For 9 years, she kept on coming. And then finally, she comes in, waving a report, almost with a smile on her face. It was the strangest thing, saying, "See, I told you I had cancer." Yes. 9 years. And like, what do you expect? You created the damn thing. You've been focusing on it. You know, you've created a self-fulfilling prophecy. And guys, this is the reason when Dr. Northrup was talking about why, you know, at the Advanced Medicine Conference, when people started talking about the victim mentality and I shut it down, it's because of that exact thing. All right. Where attention goes, energy flows.
Yes.
So if you're worried about the medical board coming after you and you're worrying about it, guess what? You are fueling, you're giving that power. I choose not to do that. So I've got all these different little things. And it's so funny. I mean, we did not talk about what we were going to talk about. I mean, as God is my witness, Dr. Northrup and I talked about a couple of different things. We talked about timing when we could do the webinar. We talked about, you know, how we were going to let our followers know. We never once, even for, I mean, tell me if I'm exaggerating. Did we even spend 5 seconds on talking about what we're going to talk about, with the exception of you saying, let's just, you know, it's going to be, what did you say? It's a treat for people to watch you and I talk together. But that's literally all we talked about, right? We didn't come up with any kind of script. All right. So here's, let me tell you what Dr. Northrup said. It's a perfect lead-in to really how TAP started. So when I was a kid growing up, my dad would make us watch or hear or listen to audios and videos. Back then, they didn't have too many videos, but there were some archives and some of those old time, the screens that they would play the microfiche type things. But my dad wanted us to learn everything we could from Napoleon Hill, from Andrew Carnegie, from Nightingale Conan series.
And so I had all those tapes, all those. Yes, yes.
Exactly. So this is how I grew up. Now, then I grew up when I went to college, you know, stopped looking at that stuff. But as I became a physician and started dealing with people that were chronically ill, I started looking at what defines the success in one person versus the failure in another one when you look at somebody with cancer. So you've got a nurse that comes in that's already, she's already in her early 70s. She's got multiple metastatic disease. She had breast cancer. She went through chemo. She went through radiation, got a clean bill of health. And 5 years later, by the way, what I'm telling you, these stories I'm going to tell you, they're videos. You can go and watch them. Okay. You can just go and you can look at them on Advanced Medicine. So she's got a clean bill of health. And then 4.5, 5 years later on a routine chest x-ray, they find some kind of suspicious lesion in the apex of her lungs. They work her up and they find that she's now got cancer that's metastasized to her scalp, to her brain, to her spine, to her lungs, to her liver, and to her spleen, and to her left breast now. And they give her 3 months to live. She's refractory to chemo and radiation, which means that it's not working. She's got multiple metastatic sites, stage 4, end of the game. She's referred to hospice. She's 72 years old. She's going to die. So she comes to us, and we have her on video 4 months after she started treatment. And we have her on video 2 years later. We have her on video 4 years later. We have her on video 8 years later. We have her on video 12 years later. She died at 84 or 85 years of age. And She lived well beyond her expected lifespan. But here's this interesting thing. Why is it that a woman like that with multiple metastatic disease, with end organ failure, her kidneys are starting to fail, her liver is starting to fail, and then she comes to us and we get her back. I mean, she looked like death warmed over. She was cachectic. She had, you know, no appetite, was hardly able to ambulate. Why is it that we're able to be successful with her? And then we have a stage 2B cancer, no organ failure, no metastasis. You can't even tell she has cancer. And in 2 years, she's dead. Why is that person that is end stage referred to hospice? Why does she live and why does the other one not? And so I'm trying to figure this out. And, you know, I'm a little slow and I started realizing that there's something that's inherent about the ones that live and some that don't live. To me, cancer is nothing more than the ultimate business success versus failure, right? So how do you determine what are those criteria? And I was looking at this and I started realizing the things that define success versus failure in cancer were actually the same things that define success versus failure in all chronic diseases, right? So now I'm really intrigued. I'm starting to look at this. It's not just cancer, it's also in other chronic diseases. And again, like I said, I'm a little slow. It took me a few years more to figure out that, wait a second, it's the same criteria that defines success versus failure in cancer as it is in all aspects of life. And it came full circle back to the same principles that I had learned as a youngster from my dad, beating them into us. So
yes.
And then, of course, I had so many of my own components that I learned through that. I was a Boy Scout through the military, you know, going through certain situations, potentially life and death situations when I was in the military, and being around some incredible people that taught me so much. So taking life experiences, taking all these different things, and then seeing it literally in the battlefield of in a clinic. Like when I say battlefield, I mean dealing with people that are literally fighting for their lives and seeing which ones succeeded and which ones failed, and seeing their mindset, seeing how the change, everything changed. I am convinced that there are certain people that can never get cancer. And that's all, it comes all down to the mindset issue. In fact, cancer, there's a toxicity issue, there's all these different issues with cancer, but guess what? The one thing that if you do not address in cancer adequately, you will always fail. It is the fifth toxicity. And the fifth toxicity, I have seven toxicities in my book that I wrote about. And if you really want to know, you can read those book and then you guys can find out. No, I'm just kidding. I'll tell you. The fifth toxicity is emotional psychological toxicity.
Yep.
And it is the most important component because cancer is an emotional issue. All right. It is an emotional issue. And in my philosophy, I'll give you the very simple definition. Dr. Northrup, would you like to hear my simple definition of cancer?
Yes. And then I'll give you mine.
So my simple definition of cancer is this, and guys, this is not meant to be a cancer conference or a cancer webinar, but I think you guys are starting to understand because really what we're going through right now is a cancer of the planet. It's a cancer of the mind.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Literally what we're going through. So my definition of cancer is literally this. Cancer is a slow decay. Where growth stops, decay sets in. When growth stops, you don't just stay right there. It's not like you work out all your life and then you say, you know, I think I'm going to stop now and I'm going to just maintain that great body that I've worked on. No, it doesn't work that way because within a couple of weeks, you start slumping back down. So where growth stops, decay sets in. So cancer to me is God's way, the creator's way of saying either get busy living or get busy dying. Because if you're not living, by definition, you're dying. That is all that is. When people say, well, you know, they're like with the COVID right now and some other nonsense with cancer, we're talking about people are no longer living. They're so scared of dying. They're just existing. And existing is not living. There's a difference between living and existing. So if you're not living, by definition, you're dying because there is no other aspect. If you're not a creator, then you're a taker. If you're not growing, you're decaying. It's the same thing, guys. So if you're not living, you're dying. And existing is a slow form of dying. It's a decay. It's a deterioration. That's all cancer is. And so all a person has to do to really get out of cancer is start living again. You have to be, your spirit gets invoked again and you start living. You choose, literally. So the mindset aspect, what I have found with dealing with hundreds of patients from all over the world, I've got patients from 94 countries, and we have a very, very, very high success rate in our stage 4 cancer patients. But I can tell you this, in fact, one of the people right here, one of my coaches is somebody who's a physician and had cancer and came through the clinic of treatment. And when I look at her, I don't see somebody with cancer because it's all gone now. I know energetically it's all gone because she started living again. And this is the key that I want everybody to remember. Whether you join TAP or not, regardless of what you decide to do, start living. If you want to get any message away from this message, just start living. And being fearful of COVID or wearing a mask or social distancing or living in your house afraid, that's not living, that's existing. And guess what? I would much rather live for one day than to exist like that for eternity. It is not living. There's nothing to it. Yeah. It's literally a waste of your organic piece of matter that's occupying precious space on this earth. If you're doing that, you are sent here to for a purpose. So live your purpose, whatever that purpose is. But it wasn't to wear a damn face mask and live inside a closet afraid of something that is an illusion in the first place.
That's right. So now I'm going to give you my definition, which is from Lewis Thomas, who wrote Lives of the Cell and was the medical director of Memorial Sloan Kettering. Here it is. Cancer, he said, I have come to believe that cancer is the physical metaphor for the extreme need to grow.